This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, and Max Foisy, all here to do the showbiz segment of the show, which is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company. WindowWorldSt.Louis.com is where you will find them. Max and I have a couple of movies to get to, but before we get to the movies, I would like to give you a recommendation for Netflix. This week, Netflix released two Dave Chappelle stand-up specials. You're nodding your head. Have you watched them, Ian?
No, I heard about it, though, but I can't wait to watch them.
Dave Chappelle, who had not done anything for over a decade since walking away from Chappelle's Show, famously, at Comedy Central, and a huge deal there. Well, he has a huge deal with Netflix. They're giving him $60 million for three specials. And the two that they released this week are specials he recorded in 2015 and 2016. So he was on Jimmy Kimmel this week, and Kimmel asked him, why did you release these two? And he said, money.
I had them done, and they asked for them.
I went in the closet, I blew the dust off them, and said, there you go, there's two of the three.
My girlfriend's son, we talked to him last night, and he was asking about it, and asking if we had seen it or anything like that.
You have a girlfriend?
Yeah, I do. I have a girlfriend. Her name is Sandy. Her son's name is Ryan, and he said that he watched both of them.
Mm-hmm.
He'd liked the first one much better, he thought.
Yep.
In his mind, the first one was a lot more clever.
Yes.
And it was about OJ, I guess.
Well, the first one he did at the Hollywood Palladium last year.
Okay.
It's more contemporary, but through the whole set, which is about an hour and 10 minutes, which is perfect for a stand-up set.
Yeah.
He told four stories of times he met O.J. Simpson.
Okay.
But he interweaved them. So he would do the first O.J. story, then he went off and talked about something else, and then while the laughter was still big from that, he said, the second time I met O.J. Simpson, and they're all fantastic stories.
Okay.
But Ryan is right.
Yeah.
The other special, which he did 2 years ago in Austin, Texas, not quite as good.
Yeah, he said that one wasn't as good, wasn't as clever. He thought the first one was more clever.
Yeah.
But he said that he liked them both. But
I got to tell you, I've been watching quite a few stand-up specials on Netflix lately because they are taking away from HBO the position of being the stand-up comedy TV outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some on there. I discovered this woman named Eliza Schlesinger, who I guess has been around for 5 or 6 years. She's got three specials out. My wife and I watched two of them. She's brilliant. Absolutely hysterical and brilliant. I watched this guy, John Mulaney, who I'd never heard of before.
Oh, sure. He was a writer on SNL, had a very short-lived sitcom, I think, on Fox.
Okay.
It was called Mulaney.
Yeah.
Very, very clever. I also discovered this folk rock parody duo, Garfunkel and Oates.
Sure. one of them is an actress. She's been on Big Bang for...
Kate Micucci.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
She played Raj's girlfriend, who had social anxiety disorder. And the other one who's on there, whose name I cannot remember right now.
Kate Micucci?
Yes, M-I-C-U-C-C-I. And the other one whose name I cannot remember right now, she was also in The Big Bang Theory. She played the brilliant scientist who wants to have a three-way with Raj and Howard.
Hmm.
Oh. Don't know if you remember that episode, but the two of them, as Garfunkel and Oates, they took the names of two of the great
duos,
half of the duos,
yes,
ever, the ones who were the lesser talented,
right,
of the,
right,
duo,
yeah.
and their songs are they're quite raunchy, and there's a lot of sexual stuff in there. But this was a concert that they did, not their Comedy Central series, but a concert that they did, and man, is it funny! I mean, with all of these things that I'm mentioning, I laughed out loud, and particularly this one of the two Dave Chappelle specials, I have to recommend. And he did something that I really, really like, which is, he made people give up their cell phones before they went in. So you don't see people holding up their phones and videotaping it, which I've bitched about when I go to a concert and the person in front of me. I had one show I went to at Riverport last year where the woman in front of me is holding up her iPad.
Yeah.
So instead of seeing the show that I paid $100 to see, I'm now watching it through her 5.5-inch screen held 3 feet in front of me. Ridiculous. So he makes people give up their phones or tells them don't bring them. And one of the things that he explained on Kimmel this week is when people bring their phones in, it makes the comedians take fewer risks because they know this thing that I'm doing is really just for you, but you're going to recorded, and the rest of the world's going to get to see it, it might not be my finished product yet. Mm-hmm. Now, by the time he gets around to doing a Netflix special, you would hope that it is finished product, and it is. But, you know, like if he goes to a comedy club to work out some of this stuff, and there are 35 people there, and they all get their cameras out, and it all ends up on YouTube, that can ruin whatever the bit is going to be, because by the time you finally see it, you've already heard it. You've already seen it online.
That's why we don't broadcast this show, right? That's why this is all rehearsal, right? Because one day we will actually go on the air, and it's going to be brilliant.
I've said it many times. If you would tell me when rehearsal is, I will show up.
We actually broadcast the show. We ask people not to record it.
Okay.
Yeah, don't record it.
By the way, we've never had a request from anybody. Can I record you?
No. Yeah.
There's no interest in that, so we don't really care.
What do you think about Chappelle's comments about Key and Peele?
What did he say?
Well, they were asking him, I think it was 60 Minutes, you know, what does he think about the state of comedy now? And he was saying what a big fan he is of Key and Peele's sketch comedy show. But he also felt like their entire format and what they were doing owed a lot to Chappelle's show.
Yeah.
Something that I think Key and Peele have been upfront about, too. But he said it with the addendum that when it says at the end of every show created by Key and Peele, it kind of hurt him a little bit.
Well, I mean, he can't claim to be the first guy to ever do a sketch comedy show.
Exactly. And I thought, boy, Dave, like, we all think you're a genius. We all think you're great.
I never heard Dave Chappelle say, thank you, Sid Caesar.
Exactly. So I thought it was a little bit of a reach for him to say, well, wait a minute, you're doing racial comedy. I invented that. Because, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't. Although he does say in the Netflix special, in one of the two, he says, you all know that I went away for a while. I didn't do any comedy for about 10 years. And meanwhile, Key and Peele were doing my TV show. So he makes that reference.
Exactly. So I think it kind of, he thinks that maybe they wouldn't have had the impact they did had he still been around, which is an argument you could make, but to pretend like maybe they took his career, I'm not sure that's accurate.
One last thing I want to say about stand-up comedy specials, and like I said, I've watched a lot of them, not just the ones I mentioned, but Trevor Noah from The Daily Show, he's got a new one that's not political, but it's actually funny, and he does some amazing voice impressions of different accents from around the world. I've watched Mike Birbiglia, Bill Burr, Jim Gaffigan, whose new special sucks, Colin Quinn, a bunch of others that I've watched lately. Too many of them still feel like they have to have a little sketch at the beginning of the show, before they get to the concert portion.
Are you talking about like a video sketch?
Like they've got to do a little something backstage.
How can we get to the video on time? Oh, no, I lost my car keys. That kind of thing.
Exactly. And it's all, 100% of those are lame.
Mm.
And by the way, we're putting this on to watch a stand-up comedy special. Just get to the stand-up comedy special. That's all we need. There's one I watched. This guy who's going to be on Showtime next weekend. His name is Steve Byrne. Or it's in 2 weeks, actually. His name's Steve Byrne. I'd never heard of him. Asian comic. He comes out on stage. He's okay. But before he comes out on stage, his mother, his father, and his identical twin brother all have to be out there to introduce him. And the mother says, and now the funniest man in the world. Shut up. You're the guy's mother. Of course you're going to say that.
Sure.
We don't need you on stage. Just let the lights go down, and the person comes out, and they do their 70 minutes of comedy. That's all we want. So, I recommend the Chappelle stuff and the other stuff I mentioned, but we don't need that. We don't need the skits.
So when we put the Paul Harris show on DVD, we're not going to do the sketch anymore.
No, there won't be any sketches.
Okay. I have to call my mom, too, and tell her that she can't introduce the band.
Yeah, that's Dan's new band, The Daily Planet, which is going to start doing gigs.
No, Seventh Planet.
That's what I said.
Yeah,
Seventh Planet. That's right.
The Daily Planet.
What happened to Stowaways? That's gone.
No, yeah, Seventh
different
Planet.
Different people?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
same people?
No, same people. Seventh Planet.
Pretend Stowaways never existed.
Yeah, don't even go there.
Well,
I'm guessing somebody sued somebody, but let's not get into it. Other stand-up specials coming soon. Louis C.K. has a new one on Netflix coming out in a couple of weeks. And then later this spring, new ones from Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock. So again, Netflix is now owning stand-up comedy in a big way, signing big stars and spending tens of millions of dollars on them.
Oh, and we were talking about this the other day. How does Netflix recoup that money?
Subscribers.
I mean, the subscribers, I mean, are they? Do they have that many subscribers?
Yes, they're approaching 100 million.
Wow. Okay.
And they're also worldwide. So there are probably stand-up comedy specials in, Spanish and French. And
Canada, there's a Netflix. Yeah, there's different subscriptions based on where you live. And to think about 100 million people, and that's people share their passwords, too. So they actually have a lot more people watch it. Because, I mean, everybody knows a ton of people who share their Netflix account.
Yep.
Not that I would ever advocate that. So.
Mm-mm.
Not at all. Let's move on to the movies that are out this week.
I do pay for mine.
So do I. Let's move on to the movies that are out there this week, including what will probably be the big weekend blockbuster, which is the space movie Life, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds. You and I both went to see this the other night.
Although I don't think it'll be the big blockbuster of the weekend. I think Go, Go, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers will probably be the big one this weekend. You and I declined the invitation to go and see that one.
I've never seen a Power Ranger of any kind.
Me neither. I don't know how they arrange that power. I don't know what they do with the power. How are they? Is it like a park ranger? Are they enlisted?
Yes.
To make sure the power is ranged?
Interesting you should ask that. If you go downtown to the Arch and you talk to the people from the National Park Service, they'll tell you it was originally Mighty Morphin Park Rangers.
There you go.
And the National Park Service sued them and said, you can't use our name. It's like the Olympics. We own that. And so they had to become the Power Rangers.
And then Ameren UE jumped in.
Yeah. Ameren UE sponsors them. That's how it happened. Yeah. That's how the power got in there. A little behind-the-scenes stuff a lot of people don't know.
I have finally reached the age where they are making nostalgia products for things that I have no nostalgia for. it's probably the first time that's happened, because even with Transformers, Ninja Turtles, I remember that stuff from being a kid. I was already 19 or 20 when Power Rangers came out. I have no clue what it is. I don't know why. I don't know what a Rita Repulsa is.
And by the way, don't email us or text us.
No, I don't care.
We don't care.
I watched some of the Power Rangers when they were on TV with my kids, and I still don't know.
Well, you know what, though? But I'm fine with it. I'm certainly not, as the kids would say, I'm not dissing Power Rangers. Go have your franchise. Go have your 17 movies.
That's fine.
Good for you. It's just they were screening it on the same night as the Alien Invasion movie Life, and both you and I were like, well, let's go see that. I can wrap my head around aliens, you know, attacking Earth.
Yeah. Speaking of nostalgia, one of the other movies that's opening this weekend is Chips.
Yes.
Is anybody nostalgic for Chips?
No.
That's one I never watched.
I've never seen an episode of that.
Really? My older sister watched it.
You did?
Yeah.
Seems like one of those shows that the people who watched it just had the TV on and it came on.
Pretty much.
It was never appointment viewing. I got to get home. Chips is on.
No.
I don't think it was a serious show, though, right? Didn't they kind of know they were goofy?
Yeah,
right?
It was goofy, but there was a message in it, too. And then they actually went and they got some bad guys, but yeah, for the most part, it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek.
Is there a chance this does anything at the box office?
Show?
I don't think so, because
they didn't even screen it for us.
Younger people don't know what Chips is, and then older people who do, they don't care,
right?
So, Dax Shepard, I guess, acquired the rights to Chips because nobody wanted it.
Because he had $5 in his pocket.
But he wrote and directed a movie a couple years ago called Hit and Run, which I thought was a delightful kind of 1970s throwback, Smokey and the Bandit type movie. And I think with this movie, too, he's trying to do that 70s throwback thing. I just don't think people care about Chips.
No.
Plus, the title, by the way, it's California Highway Patrol, so it's CHP. And if you remember the old title sequence, they'd be like, CHP. With a little eye.
They put the eye in
there. Yeah. It's like, you don't need the eye.
That little eye.
Yeah, the little tiny eye that would just pop up there.
But that's what they do in Hollywood now, which is they go back and they say, what old TV show hasn't been done? I remember years ago, they did a big screen version of Car 54, Where Are You?
With David Johansson.
Right, which came out at a time where, again, anybody who had watched that show when it was on, which was that the 50s?
Yes.
Right?
It was Al Lewis and
Fred Gwynne, right?
Fred Gwynne, yeah.
No, it wasn't Al Lewis.
It was
It was the other guy. Yeah,
the guy who did that. That was his whole catchphrase.
But Al Lewis was in that, though.
He was the captain.
Yes, he was the captain. But the other guy, they went.
The problem is, by the time they made it into a movie, everybody who was in the demographic who watched that show
were dead.
Was dead. No longer around. Yes. Like with Chips, the younger generation doesn't care. They never heard of it.
Well, they did Starsky and Hutch, too.
They did with Snoop Dogg as Huggy Bear. What was the last television show to be adapted to actually make a lot of money? Maybe The Brady Bunch, because you even had a sequel, Brady sequel.
What about The Fugitive?
That's probably
not counting Star Trek, which went off and launched its own thing. I think The Fugitive is probably the most successful TV to movie production.
Best of those.
I didn't watch this one, but I heard that 21 Jump Street was pretty successful.
Those are almost parodies or satires of that show. Adam's Family was really fantastic.
Yes, it was.
But the Brady Bunch, I'm the only one in this room probably family that went that saw both movies and really like them because they make fun of the Brady Bunch. And I still to this day will watch a Brady Bunch when it's on MeTV. I love the Brady Bunch.
Fantastic.
Was that Shelley Long in the movie version?
Yes. Yeah.
Playing
yeah.
Carol Brady?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Well, now we've Ben Stiller's wife, I can't remember her name, played Marcia.
McCormick? No, Marie McCormick was the real one.
Yes. I can't think of her
but
name.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Well, now we've run out of time Christine for this segment, something? So we'll take a... Yeah, it is Christine something. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll review other movies that are in theaters this weekend that we have seen and can review for you, including Life, this new alien movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and my Mississippi Grind co-star Ryan Reynolds. And we'll also get to Personal Shopper, which is a new paranormal movie with Kristen Stewart. All that coming up here on the Big 550 KTRS. And we continue along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris with Ian Geis and Dan Strauss and Max Foisy. And let's finally get to a couple of movies that are coming out this weekend that we have seen, including, well, I actually started introducing this a half hour ago, the Ryan Reynolds, Jake Gyllenhaal space alien movie, Life.
Yes.
You go.
Okay.
I'll jump in.
All right.
Because I know that you are seething about this movie.
Now, wait. Is this a true story?
Yes, it is a true story. Yeah. There are movies where trailers can be a little misleading. And more times than I can count, I've been dreading seeing a movie only to have it surprise me. And it's always a wonderful feeling. Most recently, there was a movie called The Accountant that I had a really bad trailer. And I thought, well, I know what this movie is. Ben Affleck's going to kill a bunch of people, and I'm not going to care. And I was surprised by the movie. It had a lot of twists and turns. It was very smart.
Yes.
I certainly didn't know where it was going. And I walked in with a chip on my shoulder saying, I'm smarter than this movie. I know what's going to happen. I was wrong.
Yeah. And by the way, not enough people saw that movie because I think they got turned off thinking that exact thing.
Yeah.
But it is a good movie. And if it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime, you should look for it called The Accountant.
Yeah. It's a great sleeper type of movie. Yep. And so when I started seeing ads for a movie called Life, which we can all agree is a horrible name for a movie. It's been in the name already of about 10 different movies.
You know, the only person who should review this is Mikey.
Oh, there you go. Couple of breakfast cereals. You've got a board game that families love to play together.
You got a Martin Lawrence. Was it Eddie Murphy?
Eddie Murphy. That's the one that everybody talks about. But actually, there's been about 10 movies with this title. When Keith Richards wrote his autobiography for the Rolling Stones, he called it Life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's lots of things with this.
He doesn't remember that, but you do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would rather read that book again or eat the cereal or play the board game than watch this movie. There's lots of things that made me scratch my head. Number one, why was everybody okay with this title? Number two, why Jake Gyllenhaal at this point of his career where he's doing more adventurous movies, he's getting some awards consideration. Neither one of us liked Nocturnal Animals, but beside that, though, he's been on a career upswing. And to tie it in with the whole accountant thing that we were talking about, I watched the trailer and I said, okay, they discover alien life and it begins killing them one by one on this space station. That can't possibly be the movie. This one might surprise me with some twists and some turns. And no, it we try when we review movies, Paul, to not spoil anything. There's nothing to spoil in this movie. It's as straightforward as the trailer would have you believe.
Mm-hmm.
This six-member crew of the International Space Station happens upon a Mars rover.
Well, that happens upon. Their mission is to get to catch this ship that's returning to Earth with some Martian soil samples.
And they
know it has a single-cell organism on it, which would be the first extraterrestrial life that we've ever found.
Although nobody on board seems all that, and I know they're scientists, but when they do have this sample and it starts growing and changing, I don't know if they really, that would freak me out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in a let's throw a party kind of way,
mm-hmm.
and they're just more like, yeah, okay, let's go eat some cereal and play a board game. You know, this thing is in the corner growing.
Yeah, as the movie goes along, they have this first non-Earth life form that's a single cell organism, and one of the scientists tries all sorts of things to see if he can get one to come to life. Which apparently nobody in this movie's ever seen a science fiction and or horror movie because you know that's not going to work out well.
It's not going to end well for this crew, and you know that, and that's fine. When you go see a Friday the 13th movie, you know the camp counselors, it's not going to work out for them.
Yeah.
I'm okay with
me
that.
Me too.
If you have certain elements, if you have inventive kills, or again, twists and turns. It reminded me, and not in a positive way, of The Thing, John Carpenter's classic movie, which was a remake. That alien didn't behave like you thought it was going to. And it's sort of, there's a moment early on with one of the crew members, I won't say who, when they're being attacked, that I thought we might get something like The Thing, where it might kind of almost possess them or something. Yes. And I thought, okay, here it comes. Here comes the point where the movie really wins me over. No, because it does not happen. There's a time about halfway through when the movie, which I found to be overly serious, very dour tone, and I don't understand
why. They don't even
have
a wisecracking member of the crew.
Well, they kind of try that with Ryan Reynolds. It's almost like they watched the box office receipts of Deadpool and said, hey, Ryan, just go make jokes over there in the corner.
Didn't work.
It doesn't work. The movie is very, very dour. But at a certain point, halfway through, you start getting point of view shots from the creature, from the monster.
Yep.
And I thought, okay, here we go. Monster POV. Let's make this really campy and really fun. But they don't do that either.
No.
I really, really hated this movie. And I know that after I saw Kong Skull Island, I was told by every single person on the planet, hey, it's a big monster movie. Who cares? Go have fun with it. I imagine people might say the same thing about this. Hey, it's an alien movie. What do you want? Well, there's been amazing extraterrestrial attacks movies. I mean, obviously Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the
Which
Alien
this is
sequels.
Completely derivative of.
And they don't even get that right. They don't even give you the sense of isolation or the sense of resourcefulness.
Isn't there a new Alien coming out later
in
this year?
In about 3 weeks, there's Alien Covenant. And full disclosure, you know, Ian is on Reddit right now, and I was on the Reddit threads for Life months ago. Somebody had seen it at South by Southwest or something, and they, of course, it's not true. I'll go ahead and tell you it's not true, but they were saying, oh, nobody realizes Life is almost like that movie The Woods, which turned out to be a secret Blair Witch sequel. And I was racking my head going, well, I wonder what movie this is sort of a backdoor sequel to that they're not telling us. So when it began and it said Skydance Entertainment, I said, oh, they're going to announce a Terminator spinoff. I wonder if this has something to do with Terminator. No. And then with Alien Covenant coming, I thought, okay, as this alien it goes through different changes, it's going to become a facehugger or it's going to become a xenomorph. No. There's no reason to stick through the end credits. Spirit in the Sky played over the end credits, which also made me angry. How many space movies since Contact?
How about just how many movies? I have a list.
Oh, it made me so angry.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Made to Order, Apollo 13, Ocean's 11, Saving Grace, A Simple Plan, Sandlot 2, Superstar, The War, The Longest Yard, Evan Almighty, Secret Life of Girls, Sunshine Cleaning, This is the End, Lovelace, Miami Blues, Contact, Wayne's World 2, Lesser Evil. Remember the Titans, Universal Soldier, My Name is Joe, Huntress, Flight of the Phoenix, The Dish, St. Vincent, and 23 more movies have used Norman Greenbaum's Spirit in the Sky.
It absolutely does not work here at all. You have this serious, dour movie that tries to shock you with its ending, which is not shocking, and then Spirit in the Sky comes up. And I'm like, I'm saying, why?
Now,
why is this?
I have to tell you, when I Googled this, I also thought to myself, can I find bad versions of Spirit in the Sky that I can use for punishment? Music, I found two. We'll get to them in a half hour.
Nice.
On the challenge. Now, let me just say a couple of things about this movie. Of course, the astronauts on the International Space Station have lost communication with Earth, because that has to happen in every space movie. We can't have anybody on the outside helping. Although, even if you had communication, how would that have changed the story of this alien life form growing and eating the people on board?
It could have made it more terrifying had the people on Earth not been able to help.
And they're listening in on it.
Yes.
But he does keep it claustrophobic. The director, mm-hmm. Espinosa, keeps mm-hmm. it claustrophobic. You're inside the space station the whole time, and that's fine. And I like the fact that they're testing this organism from Mars on the space station to see what happens with it before they bring it to Earth, because
yes.
It's kind of like a pre-Andromeda strain. Let's not get that killer virus down here until we figure out what it is. However, you are correct, and there's always a however in life. The scenes with the action scenes are very predictable. However, again, there's always a however in life. I got to admit, Max, I was scared and grossed out a couple of times. There are a couple of jump scares in this movie, and there's one scene where one of the people as being...
I know the one you're talking about.
Okay.
It is an uncomfortable scene.
Yes, I actually was like,
Something else, this director did a movie called Safe House, also with Ryan Reynolds. And
Denzel Washington.
Yes, and that movie, it was sort of a forgettable film, but I remembered that the fight scenes seemed more realistic than fight scenes you normally get in action films. I felt like those fight scenes hurt. Like, you could feel the knuckles cracking and stuff with every punch. With this movie, too, I think he tries to make this crew seem very workmanlike and very, you know, ABC, now we're doing this next. And I did like that. A lot of their decision-making seemed to make sense. It wasn't just, I'm in a horror film, so I'm doing bad things.
And I like the scenes of the crew floating through the space station. It's probably a lot of CGI, but that I thought was done well. By the way, the creature, the alien, gets named Calvin by a school child who's heard about life on Mars, and she goes to John J. Calvin School, school day. So this creature gets named Calvin. I would have killed to have any crew member named Hobbs.
Sure.
Why am I the only one who thinks about these things? No. Now, I'm not going to give away the ending, but I'll also say they blew their chance at a sequel to this movie. And one more thing. And I've talked about this before.
That you would say that. I thought they were setting up a sequel, but
with the ending. If it had gone the other way, there could have been a sequel. I don't think there can be this way. I don't want to give away the ending. My wife and I talk about this all the time, which is we will go along with whatever rules you say exist in your movie world, which is one of the reasons I, among everyone else on the planet, did not like E.T., because we were told that the germs on Earth were killing E.T., and there was nothing anybody could do about it, and E.T. dies, and then comes back to life. It's the dead, not dead thing. I hate that. Well, in this movie...
See, there's a whole religion based around that, so...
I know. But in this movie, this alien life form, we are told, needs oxygen, food, and water, just like us, because it's a carbon-based form of life. Then how does it stay alive once it gets outside of the International Space Station in the vacuum of space? And even better, how did it live on Mars, which has no atmosphere and no oxygen? You can't tell me it needs oxygen, which becomes a pretty important plot point later on.
It does.
When it obviously doesn't need oxygen to survive.
They keep talking about suffocating it, or maybe, and you're right, they actually use oxygen in the film, but it makes no sense because it's been outside the airlock for a long time, and it's doing all kinds of somersaults. I get that you're telling me that this creature is advanced and is very smart. I don't know why, once it's able to, it would try to pilot something. Like, how does it know what they call it? Oh, I'm just going to steer this way. How does it...
I know.
How would it know that? Like, how would it have the concept of you are a creature and you are in this thing and this thing is going this way? How would it... Like, a small child wouldn't be able to understand that, let alone this random typical
monster. By
the way,
don't take small children to see this movie. It's way, way too gross.
It's rated R.
What do you give it on a scale of 10? A 1? Is it one of your worst of the year?
Yeah, I'll give it a 1. All right. I really, really hated it.
I'm giving it a 5 because I think it did have justifiable scare scenes in it, but the rest of it is just silly and not all that well done. So there you go. There's our review of Life. Now, you also saw the Kristen Stewart movie, Personal Shopper.
I did.
Which is not about Dan.
No.
Going to the mall.
No,
and this is one of those difficult movies to review because people want to know what is the film about. And this is a difficult movie to pin down. I can tell you the different things that the movie deals with, but then you'd be thinking it was in one of those genres, and it's not. For instance, Kristen Stewart, she plays a personal shopper, which is a real job. When she tells somebody that she kind of hates her job, it's when somebody is way too famous to go out and shop, she goes and gets the dresses.
I believe Rachel Green was a personal shopper at Bloomingdale's on the TV show Friends.
There you go. Well, here she has some sort of pop idol.
Joshua.
Almost like a Madonna or some person. And she goes and buys dresses and you know, she kind of hates her job. But it's not about the glitterati, and it's not about, you know, fame and fortune. She had a twin brother who passed away because of heart issues, and she's worried about that for herself, and how can I try to think about the future when my heart could go at any moment? But it's not really a family-based relationship drama. She also describes herself early on, matter-of-factly, as a medium who can communicate with spirits.
And for that reason, I'm out.
And there are ghosts in this movie that you see, but it's not your typical ghost story, so I couldn't call it that either.
Okay.
Also, the movie employs text messaging in probably a far more effective way to be tense and frightening because you don't know who is texting her, but it's not really a Hitchcockian thriller either. So it's a frustrating movie to try to review because it's all of these things in one. It's by this director named Olivier Assis, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. I might be massacring that, but good luck if he wants to try to say Foyzy, good luck to him.
Olivier Assis.
A couple of years ago, thank you, Dan, called Clouds of Sils Maria. Did you see Clouds?
No.
Okay, Clouds of Sils Maria was my favorite film that year. Personal Shopper, so far, is my favorite film I've seen this year.
Wow.
And if we're doing numbers, I'd give it a 10.
But we know nothing about this movie now.
The Clouds of Sils Maria was a story within a story within a story within a story. And that's kind of what he's doing here, too. He will have scenes in both films where you and I will be having a conversation and the movie will just fade out and go on to the next thing. And it's disconcerting and weird. And you don't know if you missed information or why were we at that scene in the first place. So it's definitely very artsy. You'll know by hearing me talk about it if it's for you or not. Some people, they want Power Rangers. And good for them. Other people want it, something to chew on. And I think Personal Shopper is one of those movies where you can unpack it for days and days and days.
On a scale of 10?
I give it a 10.
Wow.
It's probably Kristen Stewart's best work as well. She won the Caesar Award, which is the French equivalent to the Oscar, for her work in Clouds of Sils Maria. She might become the new Jerry Lewis. She might become sort of respected over in France, but not here. But it's just
a phenomenal
movie.
If she could just do a clown movie during the Holocaust, exactly. She could be the next Jerry Lewis. Who knows?
But I love this film. It's probably playing at the, you know, Tivoli, Frontenac, you know, Chase Park Plaza, Personal Shopper, highly, highly recommended.
All right. One other movie I have to mention before we go is not something that's out on in theaters now and has been out on video for many, many years. But after Chuck Barris died earlier this week, the man behind The Gong Show, The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game,
yes,
The $1.98 Beauty Pageant, and other lowbrow TV. And that's not an insult to him. That's exactly what he was trying
he was
to do.
Really good at
and
it.
He was very, very good at it. He also wrote a book called Confessions of a Curious Mind, in which he alleged that he also had a career as a CIA hitman.
Yeah.
Now, George Clooney read that book and thought, this is a great idea for a movie. And so he made it into a movie that Clooney directed, starring Sam Rockwell, who I have praised many, many times on this show, including recently about a movie he did a few years ago called Moon, and also the movie Galaxy Quest, which I can watch over and over and over
again. Oh, I love Galaxy Quest.
He's also in Matchstick Men with Nicolas Cage, and he's been in a whole bunch of things. Well, in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Sam Rockwell plays Chuck Barris, both as the game show host and TV producer, and as the CIA hitman who goes off on these adventures, coming home, by the way, to Drew Barrymore in what I think is one of her sexiest performances, and also running into a femme fatale played by Julia Roberts. Now, that's quite a cast. Clooney was able to get these people together to make this movie, and it's a wonderful piece of work.
And nobody's ever really been able to figure out how much of his tongue was in his cheek when he was talking about this, but the movie takes it as, oh yes, this happened, and here's the story.
We don't know if he was kidding, delusional, or honest.
Right.
What's the movie called?
Confessions of a Curious Mind.
Okay.
Go find it on Netflix or Amazon Prime or on demand or wherever you have to go. But now, in the light of Chuck Barris's death this week, it's an interesting look at a story that you may not have known if you didn't read the book.
And a story that might be true.
And
we don't know.
And it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.